have these. Heidi wanted me to wear them today, but I don't want to wear them, so I'm not going to wear them. I'm going to be defiant towards her. All right. Good morning, guys. Good morning. To get started. Good morning, Colton. How many of you, be honest now, you don't have to really raise your hand, but just think about it. How many of you, if you ever thought about or maybe dreamed about like quitting your job while you're at work, like while you're there, just like, I'm done. See ya. Every day, Joel says. Every day is my dream. All right. Now, listen, I'm not encouraging you to do that by any means, but I will say that if you choose to do that, there's actually some biblical warrant. Because in today's Bible story, the people that we're going to look at quit their jobs on the job, okay? Now, I'm not telling you to go do that, but that's where we're going today. We're going to be looking at Matthew today and the disciples, and when the disciples were called by Jesus and they left Jesus, or they left their job, right, to go follow Jesus. So if you have a Bible, it's in Matthew chapter 4 if you want to follow along with us there. It's starting in verse 18. So just to give you an idea of where we're going today, next week we're going to start a new sermon series. Today we're just kind of doing one sermon to kind of set us up for 2025 and really what we want to be doing here, what we want to see God be doing here in our church in 2025. And so just to remind you, maybe, or even if you haven't seen this before, what our vision is. We don't really have this displayed, but our vision as a church is to be a part of a disciple-making movement in rural Pennsylvania. Okay, there's a lot of pieces there, but disciple-making movement, we want to be disciples or followers of Jesus, and we want to be part of a movement, not just our church, but we want to be a part of a movement, not just to grow, like I said, not just to grow a church, but we want to see all people in different churches and people that don't know Jesus yet starting to follow Jesus all across rural Pennsylvania. That's our goal, that's our vision, because in the end, really, doesn't matter how big your church is or how nice your church is or all that stuff. Okay, all that matters is disciples. Okay, how many disciples did you make? And were you making passionate disciples? That's like what a church is all about. I want to read you this quote before we dive into the Bible. This is a guy named Neil Cole, who's a church planter and writes a lot about church planting. He says, ultimately, each church will be evaluated by only one thing. Its disciples. Your church is only as good as its disciples. Does not matter how good your praise, preaching, programs, and property are, if your disciples are passive, needy, consumerist, and not moving in the direction of radical obedience, your church is not good. That's pretty crazy. He tells it how it is, right? If your church is not making disciples, and if your people are not growing, if people are not growing as disciples, that is not a good church. It doesn't matter how many people are there, how much money, how nice of things, how good of programs you run. It's about disciples. Okay, so with that in mind, we're going to see that that's what Jesus was about today, and that's what he did, and that's what we do as his followers. So let's look again back to Matthew chapter 4, if you're there by now, verse 18. So it says this, while walking by the Sea of Galilee, Jesus, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting the net into the sea. For they were fishermen. All right, let's stop there for a second. So Peter and Andrew, they're brothers. They live on the Sea of Galilee, which is this lake in the northern part of Israel. And their job was fishermen. Now, in the first century, like, they didn't eat a lot of other meat. They ate fish and bread. Like, that was pretty much it. So a fisherman was a super important job in their world. It was not like this guy. Okay, when I picture fishermen today, like professional fishermen, that's who I'm picturing. Like the guy with the super fancy boat and the fishing rod and all that kind of stuff. That's like what my mind goes to when I picture professional fishermen, but that's not what these guys were, okay? It was more like, if you ever watched The Chosen, this is their depiction of Peter and Andrew, okay? They're in a boat with a big net. They don't have the nice fishing pole like we do have today. So like I said, this is more what it was like. They didn't have fishing rods. They didn't have bait. They used these large nets with weights attached to them. And actually, this is a little bit off because the fishing would have been done at night because the fish wouldn't have seen the nets as well. And a lot of times two boats would work together. The net would drag in between them. They would drag the net for so long, and they would do that 7 or 8 times throughout the night. By the end of the night, they would catch sometimes up to 1,000 pounds of fish. So this was a long, hard, and hard job. They did that all night, and then during the day, the work wasn't done because they had to go back. They had to get the fish ready. Had to get the fish ready to be sold. They had to clean the nets. They had to fix the nets that we'd broken. So they were working all day on those kind of things. They were working all night catching fish. The point is, this was a hard job and a hard life. It was long hours. Sometimes you would get good results, and sometimes you wouldn't. And the point is, these guys were hardworking, blue collar, I would say, just everyday, ordinary men, ordinary people, okay? They were ordinary people with ordinary jobs. Later on in the Bible, actually, the Jewish leaders, when they start to kind of make some noise and like people are starting to kind of follow the disciples, they're like, who are these uneducated common men that are changing the world, right? That is amazing who Jesus picked. They were not like the stereotypical religious leaders. Like, I think about this. If you or I were going to start this religious belief system that was going to spread across the world, these guys would not be our first picks. Like, fishermen from Galilee would not be like where we go to. Okay, but good thing we're not Jesus. Jesus doesn't work like that. He does things to show how powerful he is. He loves to work through people that you would least expect it, because it shows that the power is not in us. The power is not in our wisdom or strength. The power is in him. Okay, so you might feel like, well, I'm just an ordinary person, right? I've got an ordinary job. Like, what am I going to do that's going to change the world? Listen, I understand why you would feel like that, but don't let that sink in. Don't let that thought or feeling sink in. You may not feel like a leader in the church. You may not feel like somebody who can share the message of the gospel and help see the kingdom of God grow, but you can, okay? If you have said yes to Jesus, if you are a believer, you are an important part of God's plan to restore and redeem God's world through Jesus, okay? You have a place in the mission of God. This is why our mission statement, which is right behind me, is helping people find their place in the mission of God. All of us, if you are a believer, if you're a child of God, you have a place in that mission. Okay, I know I say that a lot, but it is something that we need to become so deeply convinced of at our church that we all just believe that to the core. It doesn't matter who I am, what job I have, if I'm a student in school still. My job is what I do. My calling is to make disciples. It is to help people around me know God, whatever work that I do. Okay, so they were ordinary people. And here comes, they're at work, here comes Jesus. So along comes Jesus back in the story here. And when you read the story just like out of context, it can kind of feel like, oh yeah, this is like the first time they met, and now this random guy's coming up and telling them to follow him next. But actually, this wasn't the first time they met. We learn in the other books of the Bible and the Gospels of John that they already knew Jesus. They already had interacted with him a little bit. And they even believed in him to a certain degree, but they weren't really following him fully yet. They weren't doing what he was doing. And so that's why Jesus says in the next verse, verse 19, he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." All right, so he says, "Follow me, and I'll make you fish men." So let's talk about follow me for a second here. So something we have to remember when we read the Bible is that Jesus isn't an American or anything today, right? He's not us today, okay? He is a first century Jewish man. And so we have to read it through that context. And in the context of Jesus, they had this system of rabbis and students. Rabbi was the teacher. Okay, the word rabbi means my great one. So these were teachers of the Old Testament, of the Old Covenant. And these were highly respected people, men who carried a lot of authority in that culture. And so they would be the teachers. And Jewish children, when they were born, they would go to school. Starting around the age of 5, they would go to school, and by the age of 12, the main content was the Old Testament. By the age of 12, most of them would have memorized the whole first 5 books of the Bible. Okay, I don't know if you've looked at how long that is before, but it's a lot. Okay, the point is, their education was really important to them, and so the rabbi had a really important job, and it was really important to be a student. So the best of the best students, after they would go through that first kind of elementary school, they would get into the teen years. The best students, some would go work, but the best students would choose a rabbi. Okay, they would ask a rabbi, "Can I follow you?" Okay, and this is important because it's interesting to note that Jesus asks people, he asks the disciples to follow him. So he's kind of breaking the mold there, right? He's like, usually the disciples or the students ask the teacher, can I follow you? Jesus says, will you follow me? Okay, so that shows us that God, Jesus, is pursuing us before we ever think about pursuing him. He's calling us to follow him. It's not like we have to go find God. God wants you to follow him. He's calling, he's pursuing you before you even pursue him. And something that's really kind of interesting as you think about like the rabbis of that day, it wasn't like it wasn't like a college professor, right? Think back to like if you went to college or even just high school, like think back to your teachers or professors. A lot of times you didn't know them personally, right? You didn't like go hang out with them later. A lot of times you didn't even see, even today, like with online school, you don't even see them face to face most of the time. And so it wasn't like that at all. Back in the day, you literally followed the rabbi around. You did what they did. You ate what they ate. You slept where they slept. Okay, this was life on life stuff. Okay, you stood, you did whatever the rabbi was doing. Okay, and because of that, so that's the picture here, the picture of the feet on the screen there in the sand. So the goal that back then was that you would cover yourself in the dust of your rabbi's feet. Like that was the saying. Like if you were a student, you wanted to be covered in the dust of your rabbi's feet because that meant you were following closely to that rabbi. It meant that you were getting closer to them. You were imitating them. Okay, you were watching what they did and you were becoming like them. That was the whole goal. Like you were following them so closely, imitating them. You were trying to become like your rabbi in every single way. So that's like the context of Jesus saying, follow me. Okay, remember these disciples would literally follow their rabbi. And so when Jesus says, follow me, and when we think about that, what does that mean for us today? Obviously, we can't physically get the dust on us from Jesus. We can't physically follow him like we did or could then, or like they could then. But what does it really mean to follow someone? Right? Think about what that means. Especially in today's world, it can get watered down what it means to follow. I mean, think about like social media, right? Instagram, you can follow people on that. But when you follow somebody on social media, you're kind of just like watching them from afar. You can see what they post, kind of scroll through it quickly, but you're not actually interacting with them in any real life type of situation, right? Or like I said before, like a teacher that we follow, it's somebody that we don't really know or have a relationship with. Okay, and we see, like when we follow somebody in that kind of way of today's sense, we see things, we get to know them in our head a little bit, but we don't really become like them, right? We're not really trying to change our life to become like somebody like it meant back then. But listen, when Jesus says, follow me, to them and to us, that's what it means, okay? It means you are called to be completely committed to him. Like you are gonna follow, you're gonna listen to him, you're gonna do what he says, you're gonna want to obey him, you're gonna want to mimic him and imitate him and become like him. It is complete commitment. It is this high, high bar of follow me, come and become like me. And not only that, but you have this close relationship in all areas of life. It's not this distant kind of thing, but it affects all of your areas. It's not just when you're at one place, like when you're at church that he calls you to follow him, or when you're with this group of people. It's all of life following him and becoming like him. And when you are a follower of Jesus, your highest goal, just like the rabbi and the student, their highest goal was to become like their teacher. And our highest goal as believers is to become like Jesus. Okay, the best thing that you can do with your life in 2025 or any year or any day is become more like Jesus in your character and in your life. This is so important, guys. It is crucial, right? And pastors talk about this a lot, but this is a pastor named Dallas Willard who died a while back. But he said this, like, what's the most important thing, right? What's the most important thing? We already talked about this morning. There's hurt in the world. There's heartbreak. We've had that conversation, right? How does it get fixed? Like, what's the hope? Here's what he says. The greatest issue facing the world today with all its heartbreaking needs is whether those who by profession or culture are identified as Christians will become disciples, students, apprentices, practitioners of Jesus Christ, steadily learning from him how to live the life of the kingdom of the heavens into every corner of human existence.
I know it's a little wordy, but what he's saying is the most important thing, really, ultimately, is not anything that we can fix as human beings. Okay? All those heartbreaking things, those needs that break our hearts as we see around us, the brokenness, will only be fixed as people, Christians, become disciples. As people who proclaim to follow Jesus become not just Christian by name, but disciples, apprentices. That is what that word means. Like, you're a student of Jesus and you want to live how he lived and you bring him into every area of your life. Okay, that is how the world will change. And if we want to be part of a disciple-making movement, right, that's our vision for 2025 and our vision as a church. Like, we want to be part of a disciple-making movement. We have to get the disciple part down first, right? Like, we have to be disciples if we're going to be part of any kind of movement of disciple-making. So that is why it is so important for us to answer that call in our life. Like, are you committed to him? Are you committed to saying yes to Jesus when he says to you, follow me, which he is. He is saying to every person in this room today, through his word and through his spirit, follow me. Okay. So first he says, follow me. We got that down. Then he says this, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. I will make you fishers of men. So obviously they were fishermen. So on the first glance, it's kind of easy to think, okay, like Jesus is just like making a funny joke here. He's like making a pun so that we can use this as like a dad joke. You're fishermen, but now you'll be fishers of men. Super great dad joke, Jesus. He gave us bumper sticker material, right? If any of you have this, I apologize. But we catch them, he cleans them, fishers of men. Great. That's probably bringing a lot of people into the kingdom of God as they drive behind you, right? And this is only $4.95 on Amazon, too, if you are interested. I was looking at it this morning. You can really buy that. Okay. The point is, he's not just making this funny kind of claim when he says, you're going to become fishers of men. Okay, that's not what he's doing. Remember, Jesus was a first century Jew. Okay, and so as a first century Jew, he would have known and believed all of the Old Testament scriptures, even the parts that we don't hear about as much, he would have known it. Okay, and actually the Old Testament references fish and fishing in a few different places, but there's one important one in the book of Jeremiah. We're just going to look at that briefly because you got to understand the backstory. Okay, he knew all that stuff. He knew the book. He knew Jeremiah. And so in the book of Jeremiah, there's been generations of God's people who've been unfaithful to God. They've been worshiping other gods. Okay, and the whole point of Jeremiah, he was saying that God's judgment is going to come because of these years of unfaithfulness. And they were going to be conquered by the nations around them and sent into exile. And so every time, one interesting part about Jeremiah is that every time he announces judgment, it's always followed by a promise of restoration. So God says, I'm going to judge you for your unfaithfulness, but someday I'm going to restore you. I'm going to bring you back. Okay, I'm going to send you into exile, but then I'm going to bring you back into this land in the future. Here's what he says about that in Jeremiah 16, 14 and 15. He says, therefore, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when it shall be no longer said, as the Lord lives, who brought up the people of Israel out of the land of Egypt. But as the Lord lives, who brought up the people of Israel out of the north country and out of all the countries where he had driven them. For I will bring them back to their own land that I gave to their fathers. Okay, so he's saying that there's a time in the future where they're not going to be known for the Exodus coming out of Egypt, but they're going to be known for, God's going to be known for the God who brought them back out of exile to the land that he promised them. So it's this pattern of judgment, but then restoration. Then in verse 16, he goes back. He's kind of going back and forth between judgment and restoration. This is the very next verse. He goes back to judgment. He says, I am sending many fishermen who will catch them, says the Lord. Okay, and in the context there, he's sending fishermen. These are the nations that are around them that are going to catch them and carry them into exile. Okay, so again, but the pattern is judgment and then restoration. And so the next time we see this idea of fishermen in the Bible, we should be thinking restoration. Okay, so that back then it was judgment. Now we're thinking restoration. Follow along with me here. So the point is, around that time in the first century, as a Jewish person was hearing this, what they were hearing was, okay, God judged our ancestors. but he also promised restoration. And the next time that, like, we're looking forward next to that restoration. And so when they said somebody was a fisher of men back then, what they were saying is they were somebody who could help restore people to God, somebody who could lead other people to God and be part of this restoration, this leading others back to God. And that's what Jesus is doing here. He's promising, he's saying, you're going to be part of restoring the earth, restoring the world, right? Jesus was saying, I am the one ultimately who will restore Israel, as the Old Testament promised, and I'm the one who will restore the whole world to the one true God. Okay, he's the only one who ultimately can lead us to God. And what he's telling the disciples is, you're going to be part of this. I'm offering you to be a part of this restoration of all things. You can be a part of it. Your whole life is going to change. Your priorities are going to change. Like, okay, before you were about fishing, now you're about fishing for men. Before you were about this business, now you are about the business of helping people come into and be part of the kingdom of God. This is an amazing offer. Okay, this is an amazing offer that they would have understood as, okay, like, I'm going to be part of this now. He's telling me I can be part of the restoration of all things that God is doing. Now, you and I, today, same thing. Just like the follow me, we're called to follow Jesus, but we're also called to be fishers of men. We get this same opportunity to participate in the restoration of all things by making disciples of Jesus. Okay, by using our life to help and lead, to help lead other people to God. Something that we have to know and believe deeply, again, as believers, is that in the Bible, there's no such thing as like a follower of Jesus and not a fisher of men. Okay, there's no such thing as I'm a disciple, but I'm not a disciple maker. Like, I'm a Christian, but I have no interest in helping others become Christian. There's no, like, that's not in, that idea is not in the Bible, okay? That idea is out there a lot, and it's present in a lot of churches. Like, people just come, do their thing. Like, I come and listen, but I'm not really trying to help other people get closer to God. Okay, but that is not a biblical idea, and we have to get back to the biblical idea. This is not like an optional add-on that I can just choose. Like, yeah, I'll become a Christian, and maybe I'll choose to add on, become a disciple maker. Okay, this is not... it's not an optional thing. And so when you think about, what does God want me to do? Like, what does God want for my 2025? Listen, the answer to that is more than I can answer right now, obviously. And there's a lot of things. But one of those things, no matter what you're at, what you're doing in life right now, is to use your life to help people come to God, to help people become disciples of Jesus. Okay, again, you might be doing a job where you're doing something that doesn't seem like that at all, but there are small ways that you can do that, that every person in this room can do that this year. So let's finish out the text. Okay, how do Peter and Andrew respond to this? Look back again at verse 20. They've been called to become fishers of men. It says this in verse 20. Immediately they left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in the boat with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets, and he called them. Immediately, they left the boat and their father and followed him. So they left immediately, and then not only that, but they went and they called James and John to do the same thing. And James and John, they do the same. They immediately follow Jesus. They immediately say, yes, I will follow you, and I will take my place in this mission. I'm going to leave my nets behind, even though this is what I used to do. Now it's about, my life is about this. So their answer was yes. And what I want to ask you and challenge you with this morning is, what's yours? When Jesus says, follow me and I will make you a fisher of men, what's your answer? Is it yes? Is it yes, I will? Okay, it is time to make some changes, right? A lot of times at the beginning of the year, we think about, okay, like what needs to change in my life, right? I'm encouraging you to think about this. Answer this radical call of Jesus to follow him and to use your life as a fisher of men, to use your life as somebody who brings in others to God. A lot of times, guys, in church, we kind of, and I'm guilty of this too, okay? A lot of times in church, we kind of make the bar super low, right? Like, just come to the church, right? Maybe, like, participate. And even today, it's, like, even lower. Like, it used to be, like, try to come every week. And now it's, like, come once a month. Or, you know, come. Okay, we make the bar super low. And I'm not saying that there's not grace in our church or forgiveness. But I think we need to raise the bar a little bit as far as commitment. Okay? Like, here's what I mean. I'm not saying any of us are going to be perfect people. We're all going to mess up. So in that regard, it is a low bar. Okay, there's no like judgment for people who mess up or are struggling with certain things. Okay, in that regard, there's a low bar in that way. Like there's forgiveness. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to mess up. But as far as commitment level, right, how committed am I to Jesus and his mission and his church? We have to have a higher bar. Okay, the church has to raise that bar because that's what Jesus did, right? Jesus had a high bar of commitment. Follow me. There's no follow me-ish. There's no follow me if you feel like it. It's follow me. It's a high bar of commitment. Now, in that high bar of commitment, there's a lot of grace. Like I said, there's a lot of forgiveness when you mess up. We understand, like I understand all of that. Jesus understands that. But the bar is high, right? The bar is high to being a follower of Jesus. And so we, I think, need to raise that bar. We need to answer the call of God. You need to answer the call of God on your life today. He's saying, follow me and become a fisher of men. What does that look like for you? Become part of this restoration that God is doing. And so I just want to give you a couple of practical things as we've kind of heard what God says through his word right to us. But what can we do here practically at Harvest Mill? How can I be a part of these things that God is doing? Okay, so something that is good to understand, right, if you're part of a church or just a believer, that there's different contexts that we all need to be part of and different types of relationships that we have in our life and different ways that we make disciples as a church, okay? So when we say, like, what's our strategy, what's our vision for making disciples, basically what we do is copy what Jesus did, okay? It's not like a new game plan. It's not like anything new. Right, we just do what Jesus did. And as you look at Jesus' life, it's kind of hard to see on the left side there, but there's different types of relationships that Jesus had. First, there was on the very bottom, just Jesus and his Father. Right, there was that personal relationship that he had with God the Father, and that is the divine context. Okay, that is the context where he had a relationship with the Father. As you move up, there is the relationships he had with the three main people that were his disciples. Okay, he had 12 disciples, but as you look through the Gospels, there was three that he spent a lot more time with consistently and did more personal things with. And so this is the transparent context. This is where you have deeper relationships with just these three people, because it's just three people, right? You can get to know them better. Jesus knew them and had a deeper relationship with those three. Okay, then as you move up, there was the 12 disciples, a little bit less personal, but still, you know, it's 12 people, you can get to know them. Then as you move up, there's Jesus and the 70. These were the people that he trained to be missionaries and go out and make disciples. So again, there's still some relationship there, but he's training them to go out. Then finally, the top space there is Jesus and the crowds. This is like when Jesus would teach and he'd do the Sermon on the Mount, there was crowds there. He didn't really personally know all those people, but he was still teaching them. Okay, so as you look at what Jesus did in his life and how he had these different types of relationships, churches and believers should try to emulate this. We should try to have our personal relationship with God, and then we should try to have a little bit more of a small group of people, and then bigger groups of people as it goes up. So here's how we do that at Harvest Mill specifically. Okay, there's three main areas that I just want to cover today. There's three ways that we try to do this. We kind of skipped over the bottom one, but I do need to mention, I think it's good to mention that all of us need to have our personal relationship with God first, like the same as Jesus. We need to have our walk with God being strong. And if our walk personally with God isn't strong, it's going to be much harder to be a part of a healthy church body. And so we need to be like taking responsibility to be reading the Bible on our own and praying and all those good things that help us in our personal walk with God. But as you go up from there, the thing that we do for the transparent context is D-Life. Okay, this is our This is our strategy, right, for discipling people in this context. Basically, what a D-Life is we meet every other week for 1 hour, and we read 5 chapters of the Bible over those 2 weeks, and we talk about it. We pray for each other, and we go from there, okay? And the whole point of a D-Life is, like, these are close relationships. These are people that you're sharing things about your life, and they're sharing things, and it's like a closed space that doesn't go outside of there, but you're getting to know people on a deeper level. So if you're somebody who's thinking, like, I really want to get to know people, I want closer relationships with people in the church, this is the place to do that. This is the way that we do that here. And so our goal for 2025, right now we have one D-Life group that's actively meeting, okay? And so I would love to see for our church at least 5 D-Life groups for 2025. Okay, that's our goal. That's what we want to see happen. So as you think about, okay, well, how can I help with that? What can I do to make that happen? First of, and foremost, you could lead a group, okay? You could lead a group. I think all of you are able to lead a D-Life group. It doesn't, like, when you say I'm going to lead a D-Life group, you don't have to be, like, an expert on the Bible. All you have to be able to do is kind of facilitate the conversation and let the Bible speak for itself. Okay, just let the Bible speak for itself, okay? And any of us could say, hey, Joe and James, like, I know you go to a different church, but would you just, like, read the Bible, 5 chapters of the Bible with me, and we'll meet every other week and just talk about it, right? It's really as simple as that. It doesn't have to be, again, like I said, it doesn't have to be people that are here, but any of us could lead a group, okay? And if you're not leading a group, try to join a group and get in a group and be part of one that is happening. So this is our D-Life groups. When we say, like, we're doing D-Life, this is where we're trying to build those close relationships with one another as we grow closer to God. Okay, the next level, as we go up, there's three levels. Okay, this is called Simple Communities. Now, listen, I know that sometimes I kind of change names and stuff a lot, but this really isn't anything new. It's just a little bit more concentrated effort on something that we're already doing. So this is basically what we've been doing Bible studies on Wednesday nights as. A couple weeks ago, some of you were here when a guy named Mike Wiggin was at our Church for Christ Together, and he shared about this thing that they do called Simple Communities and how it's an easy tool to help people make disciples and then help people reach new people, okay? And so it's just changing our Wednesday night Bible study, like, format a little bit to make it align with what they do with Simple Communities. So what it is, Wednesday nights, we're going to meet together. We're going to do a discovery Bible study. Basically, it's a really simple type of Bible study. You just read a text and answer a few questions about it, and you just kind of build relationships in that way. Where am I at? So the simple communities, these are going to meet for 6 weeks at a time. So they're not going on all the time. They're 6 weeks at a time, and there's going to be 6 different sessions of them over the next year. So we're not going to be meeting all the time. There's going to be, like I said, breaks in between those. A simple community is a group of about 10 to 15 people. So it's like the Jesus and the 12 type of group. And again, you're just meeting together, studying the Bible. And this is really the place where we want to see people invited into, okay? Because as you think about, like, how are people going to, like, hear the message of Jesus today and believe in the gospel? A lot of times today, people aren't just going to come in, that aren't believers, aren't just going to come into a church like this or any church, right? Okay, they're just not coming to church on a Sunday morning. It's just not in their radar of things, okay? But if you have a personal relationship with them and know them, they would be a lot more likely to come to your house or come to somebody else's house on, like, a Wednesday night and do a Bible study, okay? That's just how people are wired today, and it works a lot better that way. And so this is the space that we want to see people invited to. Our goal for 2025 is to see 3 generations of this. And when I say generations, what I mean is we're gonna do a 6-week group, and then some of those people that are in that group are gonna go lead their own group, okay? And then some of those people that are in that group are gonna go lead their own group, and it's gonna multiply. And we want to see it multiplied at least 3 times. So by the end of 2025, we want to see a group of our church that is doing a simple community that that came from another one, that came from another one. Okay, we're trying to start with one, multiply, and multiply. Okay, that's the point of the simple communities. So what can I do? Right, how can you help with this? How can you help us see this goal? When we ask you, right, when we call you or say, hey, we're doing this simple community, say yes. Okay, I don't know how to be more clear than that. Like that's what you can do. Okay, and not everybody is going to be part of that first group, because like I said, it's a group of 12. But by the time we get to multiplying the groups out, everyone in our church will have had an opportunity to be a part of a group in a different way. So what can you do? You can say yes. And like I said, it's not always like easy, right, to follow Jesus. Okay, it's we have to sacrifice other things. The disciples had to sacrifice their fishing. They had to give that up in order to do what Jesus wanted them to do. So there might be, again, there might be a sacrifice that you have to make, but I'm encouraging you, calling you, imploring you, right? Whatever I can do to say, hey, say yes when that time comes. All right, and then the last one is the Sunday gathering. This is what we're doing here right now in this more public space. And this is where we're trying to encourage you, trying to help you make your life about making disciples. Okay, we want to see in our church, okay, and again, this is not about making a big church. That's not what we're trying to do, but we want to train people to go make disciples out there. And the more people that we can train to go make disciples out there, the more disciple making is happening. So we want to get as many people here as possible to do that. Over the last year, the last part of last year, so the last 6 months of 2024, which is when we were meeting in this space, we averaged 30 people on Sunday mornings. And so I would love to see that number go to 50 this year. I think it's possible. I think we had 45 in here last week. I was thinking maybe I should just have Spencer preach every Sunday because that was the most attended Sunday we've had. So maybe I'm going to start doing that. But the point is we can get there. Okay. It's not that far off. Well, maybe we'll see. All right. So what can you do, right? What can you do to help with that? You can invite others. Okay. It's a real simple thing to do. I'm going to invite somebody or try to invite somebody to church every Sunday. Okay, I'm not saying that I do that, but that's a great goal to have. So we can invite others into that. And it's amazing, Heidi and I, we've talked about this before, but it's amazing how many people are just waiting for you to invite them to church. Like they would come if somebody invited them. And a lot of times that's how people come. They're not just going to show up, but they come when they're actually invited. So as we look this over and pray about it and